You guys better stay the Environmental Protection Agency, not empty promises to America.
The EPA hears directly from residents of the Bristol Bay region on the Pebble Mine proposal. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, October 12th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the winner of the 2018 Alaska Teacher of the Year.
I was fairly surprised. I mean, nobody gave me any hint, so Bob told me that it wouldn't be a bad idea to wear a suit today.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. Planning today for a gift down the road builds a legacy of support for the media you treasure. Thank you for considering this public radio station in your estate planning. Speak to your financial advisor or contact us to learn more. Thank you.
The Environmental Protection Agency is seeking input on its proposal to withdraw restrictions the Obama administration had proposed for the Pebble Mine project in southwest Alaska. The EPA is only holding two public hearings, both off the road system, in Dillingham and Illiamna. The hearings come a week after Pebble released new details on its proposal, promising a smaller mine than originally planned. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk is in Illiamna. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Elizabeth, what did Illiamna residents have to say about EPA's change of course?
So the first thing I should say is it wasn't just Illiamna residents today. People came from across the region to be there. People came from Pedro Bay, from Anchorage, from Dillingham, even though there was a hearing there yesterday. So there's a lot of people who made it a priority to be here. And I guess yesterday I heard that in Dillingham, people were pretty much universally against the mine, but here it was more mixed. Yes, there were many strong words spoken against the project. There were a lot of commercial fishermen here who were very concerned about the impact of the fishery, but also there were people here, a number of people here who were speaking in favor. You had representatives from big industry groups who were here, like the Resource Development Council. The head of that organization was here. Also, the Alaska Miners Association was here. There's also a woman who is from New Halen, lives in Illiamna, and has worked for Pebble for 11 years and really values her job and the way it allows her to put food on the table. So she told the EPA representatives there that she thought that they were doing the right things.
Elizabeth, what was the atmosphere like at the hearing? Did anyone say they felt reassured by Pebble's proposal to build a smaller mine?
So the people who opposed the mine, I didn't hear any of them say that that made them feel any better. The people who were in support of what EPA has proposed didn't really bring that up either. The atmosphere was very respectful. I mean, you could hear a pin drop when people were talking. Everybody was listening very carefully to what people had to say.
As I mentioned in the beginning, there's only two public hearings, both off the road system. Did EPA officials say why they're not having a hearing in one of Alaska's larger communities?
So I asked them that even before I got there, and I never got a direct answer on that. All I was given was a statement saying they will consider the whole record, and I assume that means written comments, which people can submit from wherever they are. At this hearing, I wasn't even allowed to talk to any staffers on the record. I very much got the sense that this was a direction from on high.
Elizabeth, what's next?
Well, EPA made clear today that this is a proposal. However, Pebble, if it chooses to, can submit a permit to the Army Corps of Engineers and potentially get that permit approved. So Pebble feels right now that the process is going the way it should. However, that's not to say that there's not a place in the future for the federal government to potentially stop it. Another thing I think to watch closely is, should the permitting process begin, the state of Alaska and state entities are going to start getting more involved in this process and this review of the Pebble Mine. And so it seems like the fight is going to continue, and it's going to continue much more in our backyard as the state of Alaska becomes more involved with this.
That was Alaska's Energy Desk reporter Elizabeth Harbaugh in Iliamna. Yesterday, EPA officials heard from Dillingham and area residents at the public hearing there. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
The EPA staff ran into the palpable disappointment of well over 100 residents Wednesday afternoon. Dozens testified over 3.5 hours. Most spoke from the heart about their love for the region and their existential fear of a large mine.
If we lose our fish, we're going to lose everything. My children and the children's children's children will never get a chance to do the things that I've done.
Without the strictest of protections like 404C, our way of life, our fish, our clean, pure water will be decimated.
There's a reason that we have all this fish. It's because we don't have any mines. We don't have any dams.
This withdrawal is a threat to me and my people in our very existence as a people of this land.
That was David Nicholson, Diane Folsom, Albert Larson, Anushka Waisaki, all from Dillingham or neighboring villages. Bristol Bay's largest hub sits downstream of and more than 100 miles as the crow flies from one of the largest copper and gold deposits in North America. Dillingham is home to some of Pebble's most ardent opponents. All who spoke Wednesday, including Peter Christopher from New Stuyahok, called for their one-time ally EPA to reverse its current course.
I would appreciate if you guys would pass that on to Scott Pruitt to consider not withdrawing that Clean Water Act.
The agency staff on hand spoke at length about the Trump administration's approach and reminded their audience that the EPA had never finalized the preemptive restrictions and is in no way limited from still blocking Pebble under Section 404C of the Clean Water Act. But if that authority is used, it will now likely happen within the normal permitting process after an environmental impact statement has been completed. Dan Dunaway from Dillingham told the EPA he's not sure the Obama administration was following a just course, but he doesn't necessarily like the alternative either.
I get a sense that the process for mining permits, there's not really a clear avenue to get to no mine versus a mine. I think the process for mining permits in that way is somewhat flawed.
The Pebble deposit is located on state lands set aside for mineral development. Sensing the state was ill-equipped to protect the ecosystem and downstream fishery, Bristol Bay tribes asked for federal intervention back in 2010. That triggered the EPA's Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment, which led to the proposed mining restrictions. This was an outcome Catherine Karskalin, a commercial fisherman from Dillingham, wants to see upheld.
Our state permitting process is not equipped to consider the long-term impact of not only Pebble's Phase 1 plan, which is what I consider it, but the domino effect of the mining district this would bring. That's why 404C allows for a proactive decision, and there's no better place to apply this from Bristol Bay.
House Speaker Bryce Edgman, who hails from Dillingham and represents the region, blasted the EPA for backing down and also agreed that Alaska doesn't do enough to protect its salmon habitat.
It's been the history of our state that all major development projects get the benefit of the doubt. That's just been a fact of life in Alaska. It's time to change that now. EPA can play a large role in that. Please don't defy the wishes of the region, the people of the great state of Alaska, and our country as a whole. Thank you.
Those who lined up to speak to EPA Wednesday have done so many times for the past 7 years. They felt they had won the battle under Obama, but with one election, that rug was pulled out from under them. With a catchy new zinger, Robin Samuelson told EPA again, and probably not for the last time, that the world's greatest sockeye salmon fishery and its intact ecosystem deserve unique protection.
My people here rely on this resource and be damned if we're going to see that mine happen. And you guys better stay the Environmental Protection Agency, not empty promises to America.
EPA headed next to Iliamna to hear from residents much closer to the proposed mine site. The public comment period closes October 17th. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
An environmental group announced today that it plans to sue the Trump administration for refusing to list the Pacific walrus under the Endangered Species Act. The Center for Biological Diversity first petitioned the feds to list the walrus in 2008, the same year the polar bear was listed as threatened. The center argues the same forces that threaten polar bears, including climate change and disappearing sea ice, also put the Pacific walrus at risk of extinction. Retreating Arctic sea ice has caused more female walrus to crowd onto beaches in coastal Alaska and Russia. The crowding can turn deadly when stampedes occur. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service said the animal has demonstrated an ability to adapt to changing conditions. The agency declined to grant the walrus more protections because it said the population appears stable. The Center for Biological Diversity asserts there's evidence from government scientists to refute that claim. The organization can sue the Trump administration after 60 days if nothing changes with the listing decision. The top two officials in the State Division overseeing prisons had their last day of work on Monday. Division of Institutions Director Bruce Busby and Deputy Director Caitlin Price no longer work for the Department of Corrections, according to department spokeswoman Megan Edge. Edge wouldn't provide any information about how their employment ended.
The Department of Corrections can't provide any information on personnel matters. It's all confidential.
Edge says the department is looking to fill the positions. Deputy Commissioner Claire Sullivan will be overseeing the division until then.
She is the Deputy Commissioner of Institutions. She will be handling all matters related to the institution.
Busby is the former superintendent of Lemon Creek Correctional Center in Juneau. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska military officials visit Arctic communities.
One of the things that we wanted to accomplish while we're here is talking to elders, talking to community leadership about starting and establishing an Alaska State Defense Force attachment here at the Armory in Nome.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com.
Love what you hear on this station? Consider becoming a member.
Today, Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski sent a letter with her Democratic colleague Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts to the president regarding the nationwide opioid epidemic. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, the letter frames the health crisis as a bipartisan issue and lays blame for a lackluster policy response squarely in one place.
The four-page letter signed by Murkowski and Warren is critical of President Donald Trump's response to the opioid crisis, specifically what they say is a lack of action from the administration after promising to tackle the issue. The senators point to a statement the president made in August at his Bedminster, New Jersey golf club.
The opioid crisis is an emergency, and I'm saying officially right now it is an emergency. It's a national emergency. We're going to spend a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money on the opioid crisis.
But you need emergency powers for government.
We're going to draw it up, and we're going to make it a national emergency. It is a serious problem, the likes of which we have never had.
That designation of a national emergency is significant because it unlocks funding and can waive federal rules that make treatment more accessible. Earlier this summer, former Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price stopped short of pushing for an official declaration, saying the federal government could bring the necessary resources to bear on the problem without the move. In their letter to Trump, Warren and Murkowski write, quote, "We are extremely concerned that 63 days after your statement, you have yet to take the necessary steps to declare a national emergency on opioids, nor have you made any proposals to significantly increase funding to combat the epidemic," end quote. Alaska and Massachusetts are two of the six states that have declared health emergencies related to opioids and heroin. In Alaska, a flood of the overdose-reversing drug naloxone has made it to first responders and law enforcement officials as a result of Governor Walker's declaration in February. The move also allowed state officials to pursue federal grants and new treatment programs aimed at curbing addiction and spurred the legislature to pass bills that reduce access to prescription pain meds. The senators point to guidance issued by the Trump administration's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, which earlier this summer recommended the federal government follow steps taken by states like Alaska and Massachusetts. Both Warren and Murkowski sit on the Senate's Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. A spokesman for Senator Dan Sullivan's office says he didn't sign the letter because he didn't have time to review it in advance. With help from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., I'm Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage.
Today, Anchorage teacher Ben Walker was selected as the 2018 Alaska Teacher of the Year. Walker is a 7th grade science teacher at Romig Middle School and was granted the honor at a surprise assembly in the school gymnasium. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
41-year-old Ben Walker was one of four teachers from across the state who were finalists for the award. He was just back from breakfast with Bob Williams, the Director of Educator and School Excellence with the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, when he found out.
I was fairly surprised. I mean, nobody gave me any hint, so Bob told me that it wouldn't be a bad idea to wear a suit today, but that's all he said.
Staff and students were waiting in the gym to celebrate Walker's accomplishment. So was a lot of his immediate and extended family. Dina Paramo, the superintendent of the Anchorage School District, made the announcement.
Alaska has over 8,000 teachers, and only one was the Teacher of the Year, and that is your teacher from Romig. There he is.
Walker was nominated by his colleagues and community. Walker grew up in Ketchikan and graduated from Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington. He got his master's degree in teaching from the University of Alaska Anchorage. Walker has taught science at Romig for 12 years in the same classroom and says he doesn't plan on moving from it. His wife teaches science, as did his mom, in the same classroom where Walker teaches now. Walker says he learned a lot about his mom from teaching at Romig.
I think as adults we realize the things that our parents do when we were younger that we had no clue on, which is, for my mother, was a fantastic teaching career. So I think being here and then a lot of the people she knew as teachers, some of the younger ones, were still around when I started teaching, so I met them and they always had fabulous things to say, so it's kind of nice to learn that about your parents.
After all of the hoopla of the ceremony, Walker went right back to that classroom to teach. This week they're learning about taxonomy in animals. Walker says he never tires of teaching science.
I feel it's the most fun subject to teach, but that's just me. It's all about the same at this level. It's fun to do physics because we get to smash things. But it's fun to do anything like we just did with microorganisms with kids not even knowing they existed, really, or what they look like, and being able to have them discover that.
And Walker's students certainly appreciate his passion.
He's awesome.
He's the best science teacher ever.
Yeah, he really is.
I will tell you, they will tell you, I'm the best 7th grade science teacher they've ever had.
Yeah, you will.
Walker is now Alaska's nominee for the 2018 National Teacher of the Year, which will be decided next spring. In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough's interior gas utility has a big decision to make. The voter-formed IGU is considering taking control of the state-backed interior energy project. It's aimed at increasing the supply of natural gas in the Fairbanks area, and the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has shepherded the effort to a point where it's ready for transfer to the local nonprofit utility. As KYC's Dan Ross reports, the IGU is weighing risks and benefits as it looks at taking on the project.
Originally envisioned to provide low-cost natural gas as an alternative to wood and oil heat, the Interior Energy Project is falling a little short. That was the message from Interior Gas Utility General Manager Jomo Stewart at a recent Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation hosted meeting.
This project is simply not going to look, at least not coming out of the chute, the way we wanted it to look.
The primary issue is the projected price of natural gas to customers along a limited distribution network in the core areas of Fairbanks and North Pole. The project targeted a price equivalent to heating oil, or $15 per 1,000 cubic feet, but Stewart shared a current projection that's somewhat higher.
$20.20.
Stewart says there's potential for the price to drop if more than expected property owners convert their heating systems to burn natural gas. The price could also go down if the project secures a better Cook Inlet gas supply deal after the current contract expires in 3 years.
We have that back-end option or opportunity to try to find that more favorably priced gas.
The price tag for the Interior Energy Project is $346 million. That includes Cook Inlet gas processing, Fairbanks area LNG storage and distribution facilities, as well as the gas transportation and distribution systems of Fairbanks Natural Gas, a private company purchased by the state's Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority to forward the project. Stewart says Fairbanks Natural Gas does check out financially.
The corporation, its personnel, assets, and operating systems is solvent and sound and adequate to provide a foundation for utility system growth and expansion.
The cost of FNG is $60 million, a price critics contend is too high, but under the deal with the state, the nonprofit IGU would benefit from very favorable financing, including bonding and super low interest rates. The Interior Energy Project's goal has always been providing lower cost, cleaner energy to as many people as possible. That's key to reducing pollution from wood heating. Local air quality advocate Patrice Lee, who attended the FEDCO meeting, says the current Interior Energy Project plan is a tough call, given local air quality and economic constraints, and citizens should not feel pressured to accept it as is.
The original goals of the Interior Energy Project, I think, are still good goals. They can be met. We just need to think outside the box, perhaps, and use our resources very wisely.
Lee will have some say in what happens in the future as a newly elected member of the IGU board. The utility's steward emphasizes that the public will have opportunities to learn about and comment on any deal this fall before the board votes. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
There's renewed optimism about finding a deposit of natural gas in the Nenana Basin that can be developed. Doyon, an Interior Regional Alaska Native Corporation, has explored the area for 10 years without commercially producing gas, but their president and CEO says new data is yielding promising results. Aaron Schutt spoke to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce on Tuesday.
Very clean data. It was better than any of the data we've gathered before. And there were more targets than we expected to see as well.
Doyon has spent $100 million looking for oil and gas in the Nenana and Minto basins.
What we have learned is that the Nenana Basin has generated a tremendous amount of gas and certainly some oil.
He says to expect an announcement in November. Airport security screening rules for carry-on bags are changing again. Soon, any electronics larger than a cell phone will have to be put in bins with nothing on top or beneath for X-ray screening. That's already the status quo for laptops. The Transportation Security Administration says the change will raise baseline aviation security. It will be implemented at airports in Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Wrangell, Cordova, and Yakutat over the next 5 weeks. The rollout is nationwide, but gradual as training is completed in different places. The TSA, specifically addressing Southeast travelers, says to arrive 90 minutes early for flights.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
A storm in the Bering Sea is expected to cause minor flooding and beach erosion at low-lying coastal areas along Alaska's western coast. The National Weather Service says the storm front that began earlier this week also has brought rain along the coast. Meteorologist Ed Plum says wind gusts are around 50 miles an hour, but he says the winds are blowing away from shore. Plum says the winds are expected to shift direction overnight through Friday, bringing storm surges that push water to low-lying areas along the coast, including Norton Sound. Plum says the winds should start tapering off by Friday night. Major General Lori Hummel with the Alaska National Guard and Department of Military and Veterans Affairs is touring through Western Alaska this week, along with her military entourage from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. KNOM's Davis Hovey has more.
The team of 10 or so uniforms has many goals for their visit, some of which include bolstering National Guard forces in rural Alaska, as well as seeking out veterans.
One of the things that we wanted to accomplish while we're here is talking to elders, talking to community leadership about starting and establishing an Alaska State Defense Force attachment here at the Armory in Nome.
That's Colonel John James, the commander of the Alaska State Defense Force, or ASDF. In addition to recruiting more National Guard members, the purpose of Hummel and her team's visit to Nome, Brevig Mission, and Teller is to survey inactive National Guard facilities. According to the Major General, there used to be 86 armories in operation throughout Alaska, but that number has dropped.
As of today, we have 17 active armory facilities around the state. And so the facilities at Teller and Brevig Mission are two of the facilities that have been earmarked for repurposing. Repurposing someday for the use by communities or other state agencies, really whoever has the ability to maintain them and wants to use them.
Verdi Bowen, the Director of Veterans Affairs, pointing out that the Alaska Territorial Guard, or ATG, originated in the Norton Sound region. Bowen is traveling with the entourage to reach out to some of the 1,600 ATG veterans that have not yet been given their honorable discharges.
It's quite an arduous task because, number one, there's a lot of family members that aren't there. Number two, some of the villages are gone. And the last part is that when they disbanded them, actually here was where they did the disbandment, was here at Nome. The issue that we run into is that there really wasn't a very good record of who they were. And so it took us several years to get that master list certified and accredited through the United States Army so they would go ahead and issue those discharges.
According to Bowen, once his office has finished contacting all ATG veterans on the master list, there will most likely be a couple thousand names who were not included on the list, but his team won't give up until 6,400 members are properly discharged. For veterans of the Alaska Territorial Guard to receive an honorable discharge, Bowen says only a birth date or date of death needs to be put on file in order to find a record of military service.
That was Davis Hovey reporting from Nome. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Elizabeth Harbaugh in Illiamna, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Elizabeth Jenkins, Jeremy Shea, and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Wesley Early and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Davis Hovey in Nome. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
4 out of 5 Alaskans addicted to heroin started by using prescription opioids. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medications prevents anyone from taking them without permission, which could endanger them and lead to consequences with law enforcement. Find out more at opioids.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, Public Media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we are grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.